Do you have some cream and sugar? Well, let's see. This is an interview with Jim Black. Now, could you tell me about your grandparents?
And my grandfather was Adam Scott Black. I don't have his birth date. He died in 1921.
Mm-hmm. Old man at the time?
Yes. Well, not exceptionally old, probably in his late 60s.
Uh-huh.
My grandfather had a farm, which is now a 125-acre farm, which is now part of the Pennsylvania Junior Republic.
Mm-hmm. Is Black's Run named after him?
Yes, the Black's Run that flows through that part of the Junior Republic was named for him.
Mm-hmm.
There are several Black Run on the topographical maps. The ironic part of it is the run that flows through this farm, which we bought 22 years ago,
Oh, it's Black Run.
Also Black's Run.
Oh.
So now, that was the case. Now, I think the reason for that was this: the watershed for this stream comes from the Blacktown area.
Oh.
Doesn't have anything to do with our having
Yeah. Wasn't Blacktown named after a man named Black?
Yeah,
Is he a relation?
Yes, and I can't tell you what relative now, but originally grandfather's people came from that area.
Mm-hmm.
But this farm that Grandpa had is now part of the northern portion of the Junior Republic property. They bought it in 1943 from my father.
Mm-hmm.
Grandfather had a dairy farm. He had a milker out in Grove City.
Mm-hmm.
And also an egg route. He sold eggs and milk. He was self-dependent, very dependent on no one but himself for all of his needs. He had a dam on the stream at the farm, and he had a vertical water-powered sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
And he sawed all his own lumber, and I suppose on occasions he sawed lumber for other people also.
Mm-hmm.
he also had a blacksmith shop, which was equipped with some tools. I don't know how many, but I do remember the blacksmith shop when I was a boy. It had line shafts in it.
What's that? Had what in it?
It had line shafts.
What's that?
All right, it's a series of pulleys on a shaft mounted in the rafters of the building.
Yeah.
And this would enable him to run a grinder, for example.
Oh, I get you now. With belts, belt
driven. A drill press
oh.
or something like this by power. Now,
uh-huh.
I don't know what he used for the power.
Could you spell that, what, pine shaft? What was
line,
it?
L-I-N-E.
Oh, L-I-N-E,
mm-hmm.
shaft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right.
And I don't know what he used for power for it, whether it was powered from, it was close to the dam where he had a sawmill. And I don't know whether he may have used water power at one time or whether he used steam.
No.
But at that time, of course, the steam was the only power they had.
Mm-hmm.
But grandfather did all his own iron work. And, of course, as you saw the lathe, that is the only thing that I have in my possession now that he made. And all of the everything on the lathe, the wood framework and the pulleys he made, and all of the ironwork and the fixtures and shafts he forged himself, the bearings he made from Babbitt. He made the lathe originally to turn the porch poles for the farmhouse.
To turn the what poles?
The porch poles.
What's that? P-O-R-C-H? Porch?
Yeah, for the front porch or the back porch, the posts or pillars.
Oh, to turn them, to make them,
mm-hmm.
huh? Yeah,
to
I see.
Them.
Okay.
And then evidently cut the length down somewhere along the line because it's not that long now. But
well, do you think he was unusual in how much he made for himself, or was that typical?
I think it was unusual for a farmer to, yes, to have a blacksmith shop, to have a sawmill. I don't think the average person in that period would have been that aggressive. They
mm-hmm.
they would probably depend on neighbors or someone
mm-hmm.
maybe to buy the lumber, trade for it or something
mm-hmm.
like that. But my grandfather preferred to do everything for himself.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where he was born?
No, I can't.
Was it the old country, Scotland? Or?
No, I think he was born in the United States, and
mm-hmm.
it may be in the Blacktown area.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it was, but I
mm-hmm.
don't have
uh-huh.
a record of that.
I see, okay.
My father kept many records and
mm-hmm.
many dates. And, I have a little black book that he recorded things in.
Well, speaking of that, do you have photographs?
I don't of our farm.
Do you have any photographs of the Mercer or Grove City from the 30s or any time?
Yeah, I have a few photographs of this farm, and we have some.
Well, may I see them? I'd like to consider copying them, okay? All right.
Then the unusual part, the part that fascinates me about my grandfather, although he was a hard worker and he did heavy work, you think of the huge hands of a blacksmith.
Mm-hmm.
Yet his hobby was making violins.
Mm.
And I've seen one of his violins when I was a small boy, but unfortunately there's none left in the family. I don't know what became of the one that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
But it was beautiful.
How many did he make, do you know?
No, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I wonder how he got the idea.
It didn't look like a first time.
Yeah.
First timer than me when I saw it.
He was talented with his hands.
Yeah, evidently he was
mm-hmm.
he was quite a craftsman.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, he went to do or
yeah.
set out to do, he did.
Did he die before you were born or about that
yes,
time?
Yes, he died in 1921 and I was born in 27.
Oh, so you don't remember him that way?
I don't remember, never knew him.
Mm-hmm.
His wife, my grandmother, lived till the mid-40s when she died,
mm-hmm.
and I knew her.
What was she like?
Well, I remember grandmother very tight,
uh-huh.
very strict, read the Bible every night,
mm-hmm.
and my brother and I stayed with grandma quite a bit when
mm-hmm.
we were young.
Oh. On the Black Run farm?
Well, no. What happened in 1932, my dad worked as a tool grinder with Gruber Bessemer, or Bessemer at that
mm-hmm.
time, and things were so slow, he finally one day just quit. He said, I've had enough, nothing
mm-hmm.
to do,
yeah.
I don't like working like this, and he closed the toolbox up, and
oh.
and he owned a house in Grove City on Gilmore Avenue, and he just, grandma would of course, was too old to live on the farm anyway
mm-hmm.
about that time, so she moved to town,
mm-hmm.
and Dad and Mom moved to the farm.
Oh.
And
he became a farmer then.
Yeah, I was very small, and when it came time for my brother and I to go to school,
mm-hmm.
rather than put us in a little country one-room school,
mm-hmm.
which was Cranberry School.
Where's Cranberry School located?
Well, where it was located is it's on the Cranberry. It was on the Cranberry Road.
Which road is that? The road that goes past the hospital?
Right past the hospital.
In front or down toward Sandy Lake, or up toward Sandy Lake? Is it the one that passes to east and west? Okay.
It runs west.
Where does that go to? Does that go to Mercer?
No, it goes to the Scrubgrass Road.
I was just about to say, I always get confused with Scrubgrass Road and Cranberry Road.
Yeah, well, actually, it was, when I was a boy, it was called the Chestnut Ridge Road.
Oh.
And on it was the Chestnut Ridge School.
That was Cranberry Road, or was it Scrubgrass Road?
Well, the Cranberry Road ran from North Broad Street, or the Sandy Lake Road, if you will.
Yeah.
West, and came out on what we called the, some people call Scrubgrass, we called it the Chestnut Ridge Road.
Uh-huh, I see.
Which runs now between Kimes Garage and Jackson Center.
Well, that's Scrubgrass Road, is it Kimes Garage? Oh, yeah, I get you, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But we always refer to it as a Chestnut Ridge Road, because about a mile from Kimes Garage on that road was a Chestnut Ridge School. Maybe it was between a half and three-quarters of a mile.
Do you know how Scrubgrass Road got its name?
No. I don't know.
Okay.
I've heard many roads referred to as Scrubgrass over the country.
Oh, is that?
I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know.
What was that school like? Did you go? You didn't go to the one-room school.
Well, I didn't go to that one-room school until I went to the Lincoln School in Grove City. And what my dad and mother decided
that
we should go to the Grove City school system.
Why did they feel
that? To get a better education.
Well, you know, I was talking to the Glens, and they were adamant that the rural schools were good ones, and most of the high school students were from the rural schools.
No,
what do you think?
I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that depending on the teacher, the rural schools were quite good.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem there, of course, was that many of them were just one-room schools, as Cranberry was.
Yeah.
And all eight grades were one
taught
room,
by one person.
One teacher.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, she had... She would take advantage of the seventh and eighth graders, helping the first graders and the second graders.
Yeah,
and also, when it came time for history and geography, they could help the younger students, which was good. You know, it's a good educational beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But Mom and Dad wanted us to go to town, to school, and we did. I went for 6 years, and my brother for 7 years. And went to Lincoln School, where we had, you know, one first grade, one second grade, one third grade. And
where is the Lincoln School?
Grade.
Was that the one they tore down for McDonald's?
No, that's the one that's on Gilmore Avenue.
I don't know Gilmore.
It's an apartment building now. Okay, going up Broad Street, or going north on Broad Street.
Right.
From the railroad track.
Past the railroad, yeah, I think I know where you're in.
It's the 1-2-3rd street.
Left.
Left,
yeah.
Up the hill.
Yeah, I know it.
And
okay.
It's at the top of the hill. It's an apartment building. Apartment building.
Uh-huh.
But I went there for 6 years. And then, I don't recall exactly why, but when my 7th and 8th grade and my brother's 8th grade, we come back out and we went to Cranberry School, to the one-room school.
Oh, so you already had a chance to contrast the two schools. And could you talk about that a little bit? When you got to 8th grade, did you get a better education that last year or not?
I think I did. And I say that because there were fewer students in that grade. Now, there was only probably...
How many were there?
Four or five of us.
Yeah.
But the most, I don't recall, in the 7th and 8th grade at the time I went to that school.
Why was that good?
Well, what attention we did get.
Yeah.
Was very direct.
Oh, yeah.
And the teacher would concentrate exactly where we were in our learning and our capabilities.
That was pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me, what was the teacher's name?
Edna Baker.
Edna Baker. Is she still around, or?
No. Edna died. I don't recall. It's been probably 10, 12 years ago now.
What kind of a teacher was she?
Just a very, very nice one.
Uh-huh.
Very, very sweet, very peaceful.
Uh-huh. There's some controversy over how much discipline was necessary in a country school, that sometimes the kids could be pretty wild because they're farm kids or whatever. What do you think about that? What was the difference in discipline in the country school and town school?
Well, of course, it would depend on the teacher again, but we always had respect for this teacher,
mm-hmm.
for Edna Baker.
Yeah.
And, we were, we felt bad when we did things that we knew displeased her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, with more students to one teacher, and she has less contact, less concern, really is not that close to each student.
Yeah.
You have less concern whether or not what you do is acceptable or not acceptable. Mm-hmm.
So you like the country school?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. We took turns walking. We would walk down to the neighbors for the water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't have running water then?
No, we had a water jug in the back of the school.
How did you do? Did you have a dipper?
Yep. Well, we
a
had
common dipper.
We had a dipper as such, but the little crock had a spout on it that you could press it in and draw your water. But I think there was one dipper for the whole school. And if you wanted to wipe it off before you used it, you could. But you'd probably offend somebody if you did. We would take turns walking down and getting the water. Of course, we always tease the first graders and the second graders. And once in a while, we try to get them in trouble. You know, as kids will.
Yeah.
One little first grader, we got a new hatchet for Christmas.
Riddle, R-I-D-D-L-E.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Clarence, he's one of Clarence Riddle's. Pepper got a new hatchet for Christmas. And so he was telling us what all he could do with that hatchet. So we goaded him to going into the girl's privy and chopping out the stink pipe.
Chopping out what?
The stink pipe. The privy had a stink pipe,
a
vent pipe.
I see.
And we call it a stink pipe.
Uh-huh.
So up to the roof. Then we go to the little fellow going in there, shot at the stink pipe.
Did he do it?
Well, he started on it. But Ed and I heard the noise. He had to go out and drag him. I don't know. That generally, we didn't get into trouble like that.
Uh-huh.
I know. We got in trouble several times. One time, we would go out in the woods in the spring of the year, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And, there was a wood right across the road from the school.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of little saplings in it. So we'd get ropes, and we'd, one of the bigger boys would crawl up in the sapling, and we'd bend it down, and tie a rope on it. Well, then we'd get the little kids to go up in the saplings, and then we would swing them on the rope. Well, we'd give them some dandy rides, but no one ever fell out or got hurt. But when Edna found out what we were doing, we were in trouble.
Uh-huh.
And then one other time I got in trouble. One spring, or one winter, I guess it was, we like to trap, we go out to trap for muskrats and
Who, you and your dad or just
no,
the kids?
The kids, you know.
Was that pretty much for kids?
Pardon?
Was that pretty much for kids or not?
Yeah, generally, most of the farm boys would trap their own farms. And
for what purpose?
If no one else was trapped, to sell the
pelts. Sell the pelts, huh?
Yeah, we'd get $4 or $5 for a good muskrat pelt.
Oh.
That was a lot of money.
Yeah,
in those days.
I'll say.
So, we would trap, and one of us, and I don't recall, I think it's when I was in the eighth grade, one of us got a skunk in our trap. So you always carried a .22, and if you got a skunk way, well, generally you'd shoot
mm-hmm.
them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, we got the bright idea that if we put the skunk under the schoolhouse, we'd get out of school. So there's three or four of us. So we took the skunk, there was a hole in the foundation of the school, so we took the skunk and threw it in the hole underneath the school. Of course, when Edna got to school, like, she was waiting at the door when we got there. And she didn't have too much trouble detecting who put the skunk under there. And we really didn't smell too awful good ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to crawl underneath, drag the
skunk
out. Then we had to go home, change our clothes, cleaned up, back to school. She had it all aired out.
Uh-huh.
I think we got some extra duties. I don't remember what they were, but.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of trapping around here.
Yeah, we had Black Run flowed through our farm, and it had a lot of little tributaries, and
yeah.
Then there were several little ponds.
Would you go for muskrat?
Muskrat, generally. The muskrat was the best paying. We never tried to trap fox. There weren't too many fox at that time around. Mink were very very rarely saw any mink, so we generally just trapped for muskrat,
yeah.
And it was a good price. And
mm-hmm.
We would, I know one year my brother and I had close to 100 muskrat.
Is that right? That's a good amount of money.
Oh, it certainly is. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember in my history they were reporting there's a tremendous number of muskrat at around the World War, Second World War. Very. Some guy trapped about 40 muskrat in 1 week or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that happened, that there had been the value of pelts wasn't really anything wonderful up to that period. And the period when I'm thinking that we did our trapping was just at the beginning of that period. My brother hadn't gone to the service yet, and the price had started to climb then, but there had been a lot of muskrat and not many people trapping. But when the women started working at defense plants,
yeah.
They had money, and they bought fur coats.
Oh, yeah.
So the price of furs all went up.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, mink were... I think around $40 a piece during the war. I don't
know.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, way back then, that's
yeah.
Not a lot of money.
That sure was in those days. What was it like on the farm in the Depression? Was it pretty tough, or did you get by all right? Or
you know, I thought about that. Today we would say, wow, you know, those people are poor.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Dad had a dairy farm, and he had generally about 12 milking cows.
Mm-hmm.
And he would haul the milk himself
yeah.
into, Lewis Dairies, I think it was Borden's originally.
Mm-hmm.
The old creamery building across from the Cooper Bessemer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Borden's had them, and I think Lewis Derry's bought them out. But anyway, Dad would
B-O-R-D-E-N? You mean the big Elsie Borden and
yeah.
all that? Oh, they owned it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Dad, of course, would mount in the evening, and then again in the morning. And then in the morning, Dad would load the cans in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And we would haul them into town.
In the car? What kind of car did you have?
It was an old 1930 Plymouth, I believe.
Mm-hmm. You took them in a car rather than a truck?
Well, we didn't have a truck.
Mm-hmm.
But now you think, oh, what a mess. But it wasn't,
mm-hmm.
you know? Dad would take the back seat out of it, and he had a piece of canvas
yeah.
that he covered the upholstery, wherever it was, mm-hmm. wherever it would be in contact with mm-hmm. anything. And the floor, piece of canvas, heavy canvas on the floor. And that car, I never remember it smelling of milk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more than I can say for ours, you know, but
yeah.
you have to clean it up. Okay. It takes weeks to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
But we would haul the milk in every day, and we would get a check from them once a month,
mm-hmm.
and it was $25.
Wow, well, that's all? You lived on that?
We lived, that's all we
wow.
had for income. And out of that, we would buy whatever we needed as groceries, whatever we needed,
yeah.
shoes and clothing, and pay the taxes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's incredible.
Well, we had everything we needed.
Mm-hmm.
We had milk, we had eggs, we had chickens, we butchered beef cows,
mm-hmm.
and mother would can the meat,
mm-hmm.
can it all.
Oh, is that right?
Can all the beef. And the pork, we would either salt it or we would smoke it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time, we had a smokehouse. Dad gave me the job of tending the smoking.
Did you use special kind of wood?
Yeah, we used hickory most of the time. Sometimes apple, but
mm-hmm.
generally hickory. So, we had a little barrel out in front to lay down on the side in front of the smokehouse with a
yeah.
pipe going into the building, and we had a little vent pipe at the top. And it was wood. But he said, now don't get the fire too hot. We used a lot of green
yeah.
wood on top to make a lot of smoke. So, of course, like the boy, you know, it's good, it's good. You find better ways, shorter
yeah.
ways. Well, I'll make a long story short. I remember I caught the smokehouse on fire. I put it out with snow. Had to crawl up on the roof. The vent, it was so hot the vent wasn't caught on fire. And I thought I was home free. Dad, whatever he's doing at the end of the day, well, he came down to see how the hams were doing and the bacon and so forth. They were hanging up inside. And I had got them so hot that I'd cooked them.
Oh.
And there was a big pile of grease on the floor and every one of those pieces
oh.
of meat.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Well, it was pre-cooked, you know.
Yeah. Did you say anything to you?
No, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't any. And Dad never raised his voice. I don't ever remember.
Oh, yeah.
I never remember him raising his voice. Very quiet, very
mm-hmm.
gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What'd you do for entertainment?
Work. When we were small, we would get up in the morning in the summer when before it was light, and we would go out, and my brother and I would go out and get the cows,
mm-hmm.
bring them in, get them in their stockings, and mm-hmm. try to give them some grain,
mm-hmm.
and Dad would start them off, and we'd clean the stables out for them, what there was, and let the cows out there and I finished you milking and then we go up through hay field or cornfield or hoe or whatever there was.
Did you ever go into town?
Not very often. Not until we were older. You know, I can remember in the evening. Now, when we finished up with the milking in the summertime, you'd be tired.
So let's see, what we missed was... In World War II, you weren't able to go, you wanted to go, your brother went. What was it like around here? Did you go to Mercer much?
Yeah.
Did Mercer change much in the war, because of the war?
Well, scrap drives.
Do you remember the scrap drives?
Oh, right? Yeah.
Why? What memories do you have of them? Do you remember the big scrap pile up at the Uptown Fire Department?
No, I didn't. Uh-huh. I never actually saw that, but I remember, you know, that and a lot of the school kids helped.
Yeah.
Gathered up everything. You know, and when you look back, it's sad. A lot of the relics and things have disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
That really, I guess in the war effort, they thought, well, it's
can you remember anything in particular that was lost?
The thing that was most disappointing to me was in the 1950s, is when I got interested in antique automobiles.
Yeah.
And so many people told me about antique cars that had been stored for years.
Oh.
In very good condition
that
had just been given to scrap, you know, and there probably wasn't enough good metal in one of those things to to put a fender on a truck, and yet they were destroyed, and this really exasperated me.
Me too. You know, they lost the two Civil War cannon in Mercer.
Yeah.
What good were they? Why did they have to take those?
The scrap steel. They did send everything else to Japan.
Was there a lot of hustle and bustle around Mercer during the war?
Yeah, it seemed like, Mercer was kind of the hub of a lot of things that happened. I don't have too many recollections of being involved in much of that.
What's your picture, your earliest picture of Mercer? Could you describe it? What kind of a town was it? Just your impression. Sleepy, quiet.
Yeah, very quiet. Died at night, you know.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he was probably pretty dead all the time. I guess you think, when you think of Mercer, you think of the trials and so forth that went on that were in during that period were news and exciting. And we had, when I went to high school, I know we had some girlfriends in Mercer, and they kept telling us about going to this trial for the Graham murder.
Yeah, the Wilson murder.
Wilson murder.
Yeah.
You know.
Janice Graham. Yeah, well, Janice. Okay. What'd they say?
Well, you know, of course, the things that are mentioned today weren't ever mentioned that. You know, you didn't even talk about sex. That was a That was a dirty word. So. These high school kids, if they can get in the courtroom and hear all this smutty stuff that went on in that trial, and they come back and tell the boys and everybody else about what happened.
It was very exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Janice admitted, or somehow it came out that she'd been a lover of Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she was with Morrell. Did you hear anything about skullduggery involved in that trial? I talked to another woman, and she would not tell me her feelings about it because she felt something was not kosher.
I don't.
You never heard anything like that?
Yeah, I heard, but I don't remember the details.
Did you know Janice Graham or Morrell or hear anything about him?
No, I used to go fishing up around the. Around Mercer, and I would go past the farm.
The Wilson
farm? The Graham farm.
Oh.
Where she had been raised, I guess, where she came from. And
where is that located?
It's on the road between, here again, I've heard it called the Scrubgrass Road. The road between Centertown and Mercer. Here again, it's 5 miles out the Sandy Lake Road, but you would turn to the left, and that road takes you right into Mercer. What was on that road, and on that road there were some trout streams just off that road, and one of them was a big hole where I liked to fish for trout, and it was down behind the Graham farm.
You never knew her, though?
I didn't know her.
You know she's still living in the area? Did you know that?
Uh-uh.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to be a little careful about what I write, I guess.
Yeah, same thing with Leroy.
Yeah, Palmer, right?
Palmer, he's my neighbor.
Oh, is he? Does he ever talk about the crime or the trial?
No. I have never... Leroy worked for me at one time.
Oh.
He was...
Where, at Westinghouse?
No, at Cooper Bessemer. He was a magnet. He stayed by himself. He was a loner.
Uh-huh.
He never got too intimate with anyone. I suppose it was a complex that he did.
Yeah, he was in jail for over a year.
Yeah. About all I knew about it was what I'd heard, and somebody had said that he was tried for that murder, gas station murder.
Plane crash, you told me that you had a guard of, you were in the Boy Scouts, is that what it was?
No, I was in the Civil Air Patrol.
How'd that come about? How were you in the Civil Air Patrol?
Well, I was always interested in airplanes and model airplanes. When I went to high school, they had a program in their shop class where we made scale model airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
You recall hearing anything about that?
No.
The government would furnish the high furnish the high schools with scale plans for airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were English, American,
oh, German, for identification purposes.
Japanese.
Oh, I see.
And we would make these airplanes and mm-hmm. finish them complete and paint them black. And they were just for the, they were to
yeah.
the configuration.
Yeah.
And they had to be made fairly close. And then they were used for training observers.
Oh, yeah.
And each area, what did you put on my coffee, darling? Each area had an observing, an observation post.
Mm-hmm.
And to help train the people in the observation posts, they would show them these
yeah.
models and have them identify them.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain characteristics that, for example, the Spitfire had a wide, broad, curved
yeah.
wing.
Yeah,
and,
very distinct.
The Stuka had a
squared off,
like an inverted gull or something.
Yeah.
On it.
Mm-hmm.
But, so there would be characteristics that they could pick up and identify
yeah.
these things. So we made those in shop, and of course, they would give us a little plaque saying, congratulations, you've made a
mm-hmm. contribution.
Yeah, to the effort mm-hmm. work. Okay, then along with that, the Civil Air Patrol was active. These were Civil Air Patrol self or older men who were pilots or had some training or skills
mm-hmm.
In aviation. Maybe they were at one time a commercial pilot, or
yeah.
maybe they were a private pilot, or maybe they'd been a mechanic or
mm-hmm.
a soldier on the airport or something.
Mm-hmm.
So these men made up the Civil Air Patrol. Okay, so with the war effort, they needed more people to help the observation aircraft watching for airplanes and duties like that. So they formed a Civil Air Patrol cadet.
Oh.
Okay, and we had little patches to wear in your shirt and that kind of thing. And they would.
Did you have a uniform?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they would train us and prepare us and teach us how to march and even carry a rifle and all that
oh.
stuff. And we were asked, you know, in emergencies to, if there was a plane down. Well, anyway, I was in the Civil Air Patrol when a plane crashed. One of them, the P-51, there were two of them that were being flown somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know what the destination was. And the one of them had engine failure in the crash. And
did the pilot survive?
Yeah, I think the pilot bailed out.
Mm-hmm.
But the airplane was equipped with guns and I don't know what all, but they didn't want people coming in and
yeah, seeing
walking
it.
Off with it and
right.
messing around with it. So
yeah.
they asked the Civil Air Patrol to guard the
mm-hmm.
wreckage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they asked the Civil Air Patrol cadets to assist them.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, and I can recall they gave us a 45, Army 45
mm-hmm.
carry. And we patrolled the, they put ropes up around the wreckage and we
mm-hmm.
patrolled it.
Whereabouts was it located?
It was Route 8 between Barkeyville and Franklin at Mays, what they used to call Mays Corners, a big yellow barn there, and new Route 8 goes to the right there.
Oh, I know that. Where's the gas station?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
Anyway, you make a left at where the, just adjacent across the road from new Route 8.
Mm-hmm.
And you travel west. There's about a mile and a half on the road, and it was just off to the right, probably about 500 feet.
Pretty much in the wilderness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was it really demolished?
Yeah, it was. It was there for probably close to a week. A big truck came out, cleaned it up, picked it up, and put it on a trailer, and buried the debris that they didn't want to bother with.
Yeah.
But it was a brand new airplane, fresh out of the factory.
Oh, yeah.
Being ferried to the service.
There were a couple other crashes, weren't there? They had that auxiliary field, Tate Field, where they were training pilots. Brownie Brown. You ever hear of Brownie Brown? You remember Brownie Brown dying with a student pilot?
Just vaguely. My cousin, Bill Black, was a student pilot out here at the Grove City Airport. He went to Grove City College and took pilot's training in the J-3 Cub. I was fascinated with the whole thing. As a farm boy then, and my cousin was into the program, and they would fly these old Cubs pretty low over our farm, you know, and they would...
Is it a Piper Cub? Or
yeah. Piper. 65 horsepower engine. Well, the original first one only had a 40 horsepower.
Is that
engine.
Right?
But then they finally started building a 65 because they were a little just underpowered. They couldn't clear enough trees quick enough. But they would cut the throttles back and practice forced landings, and they didn't always get back up.
Oh, really?
But we never had any crash on our farm. But I know there were probably three or four at least that crashed out here at the old Grove City Airport. I don't know the number of things that happened. They wouldn't warm them up enough. Carburetors iced up. Didn't forget, you know. Engine quit and down they'd come.
Well, a couple of guys had a parachute out of their plane. Over in Mercer, they actually called in on the telephone line there. You don't remember that at all. No. You remember part? Did your farm have a telephone?
No, we never had a telephone, and we didn't even have electric until probably 1940, I believe it was. We used a wood stove in the kitchen for cooking and baking in the winter. In the summertime, my mother used an oil stove. And we had a Delco lighting system.
Oh, you had one of those, huh?
Yeah, 32 volt. Had glass batteries.
Had glass?
Yeah, the batteries were made out of glass.
The cases. Yeah.
And behind our bathroom, there was a small room that was just made for that. And these two banks of batteries sit in there. I don't know what the voltage was per battery. It must have been, I don't know, it must have been 18 or 20 of them.
Is that right?
Anyway,
that came in 1940.
Yeah, I would say maybe it was 15, or maybe it was 16 batteries, but it had to be 32 volts. No, wouldn't it? Well, anyway.
What'd you use it for?
Lights.
Throughout the house, or just?
Yeah.
What about a radio? Did you have a radio?
Yeah, we had.
What'd you do before you had electricity, if you wanted a radio?
Well, we had battery power.
You had battery powered radios.
We had an old radio with a big horn speaker.
Oh, did you?
Set on top of it. And I don't know what make. I think on the front it had a little blue light that when it was turned on, this little light would come on, you know. And it says Blue Diamond. I remember that. And it had this big speaker on top. And I think we could only get a couple of stations. WSAJ in Grove City, the college, mm-hmm. and KDKA.
Oh, you got all the way to Pittsburgh, huh?
Yeah, we get...
What about, didn't they add one in Newcastle and Sharon? You didn't get those, huh?
I don't remember of ever getting this. I remember this, but we didn't use it a whole lot because the batteries were kind of expensive. You had an A battery and a B battery, and they were mm-hmm. quite large. So we didn't use it a whole lot. My uncle started a radio station, WJAS, out of Pittsburgh. He mm-hmm. and another man, his name was Howard Clark. And the station was just getting along nicely and growing. I remember one time Howard came up and converted a radio for us so it would run off the Delco system with 32 volts so that
oh,
we no longer had to buy. Evidently he got some transformers or something and put in air rectifiers and converted so that we no longer had to buy those batteries.
Uh-huh. Then did you listen to it more?
Yeah, I think we did. Mm-hmm. But 1936, Howard Thunderbunion died.
Oh.
And, his wife's still living down in Pittsburgh. But the old Delco system, we'd have to go out and start up, crank this old engine up, and it would run, I think it had a gallon gas tank on it. And we just let it run, and by the time it ran the gallon of gas through it, the batteries were charged
mm-hmm.
up. Okay, and that would do us for a day or two, depending on
mm-hmm.
how much we used the lights. And we
mm-hmm.
had, all the lights were special, of course, 32-watt bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have any motorized equipment for it. All you had
yeah.
was lights and no radio,
yeah. mm-hmm.
but no refrigerators. You had all kinds.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you had electric lights? I mean, it'd be 1940.
Yeah, it was 1940.
Did it make much of a difference of elect? Did you like the old lamps?
No.
You didn't regret a bit going to electricity?
Well, I don't remember too much about oil lamps. I vaguely remember when we used them, but
mm-hmm.
from the time I remember much about it, we had the Delco. And they were good. They were fairly bright, you know. But you didn't stay up till 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You're tired anyway. Mm-hmm.
Did you have favorite radio programs, Bob Hope or?
Well, that came. Yeah, after we got electric, then came the radio programs, and
mm-hmm.
of course the decent radio.
Yeah.
I can remember listening to. Ed Chauncey and Rainbow in the mornings.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I never knew who Rainbow was. I don't know whether you ever told anybody or not.
uh-huh.
I remember when Ed Chauncey first.
How do you spell his name? I don't know. I'll have to look
I'm
it up.
I'm not sure. S-C-H...
A-U?
A-U-N-C-Y.
Okay.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when his first child was born.
Huh?
He was so excited about that.
Was that on KDKA?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was all confused, and he was cranking all this about his
mm-hmm.
baby into the program that
mm-hmm.
way. And then, of course, in the evening, there's always Fib McGee and Molly.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. Regular network shows.
Well, after school, we had our favorites. Tom Mix and
Jack Armstrong. Did you listen to that?
Jack Armstrong.
I listened to that one, too. And let's see, what else was
always there? Liked the Inner Sanctum.
Yeah, I did, too.
I Love a Mystery.
That right,
was
that was a good one, wasn't it? I loved it.
I wish I had that today.
Yes, it was exciting and gripping and scary.
Oh, man, we just...
You know, I can still remember one program. It occurred somewhere in the jungles where there was some big building, and the guy would play Lullaby by Brahms. Lullaby, and the organ, and it was just...
Yeah.
Thrilling and scary and awesome.
Well, wasn't that their theme song, Brahms' Lullaby?
No, I don't think so. I know they had a distinct theme song. I remember it was Jack, Doc, and Reggie. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that show.
They got the Bastille one time.
Oh,
they had.
It was a marvelous program.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
It really was. It would go good today, I think.
I think it would. Maybe the best program of that period. Yeah, and Bob Hope and Fibber McGee, and they had Fred Allen on. Remember that?
I listened to Mr. Keene, Tracer.
Yes, that's right.
Easy
Gangbusters.
Remember Easy Aces?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Ah, that was good.
Uh-huh.
I can remember when we lived on the farm, probably back in the early 40s. My mother was reading to us about television.
Oh.
And it might have been before the 40s, but I remember saying at the time how wonderful it would be that the picture would come right into your living room, you could watch it.
Yeah.
And she said, it will only cost $500. She said, that's what my piano cost. I never forgot that.
$500. Yeah. So that's one thing you look forward to is television.
I just remembered. I don't know as we looked forward to it. I don't know as we thought about it.
Yeah.
But when it came out, of course, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember what Mother said.
Do you remember going to the airfield, Tate Field, very often? Or did you go to Grove Cities?
Yeah, I went to Tate Field. Well, our Civil Air Patrol cadets had several drill team exhibitions
mm-hmm.
at that field.
Uh-huh.
And the corps from Grove City and Greenville, mm-hmm. Mercer and Sharon would compete mm-hmm. in marching.
I see.
And was the main thing that we competed on, if I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would put on flying demonstrations. There were some pretty hotshot pilots
Days
too, and they'd do all kinds of acrobatics.
In the war, you mean? During the war period? Or just before?
This was in the early part of the mm-hmm. war period. And
what kind of planes would they stunt?
Well, generally Cubs. Demonstrations on how not to fly.
Oh.
Of course, they do all kinds of crazy mm-hmm. things that an airplane shouldn't do.
Uh-huh.
But somewhere, and I can't confirm this, but I think it was my brother-in-law that had told me that someone had dropped a flare out of an airplane on that field, and I don't know when it was. Evidently, there weren't good field lights.
Yeah.
And he had dropped a flare out of an airplane, and it lit on a barn roof and burned the barn down there.
Oh.
But see if anybody in your history has ever, comes up with a story about that, because he had told
quite
me about
possible.
It.
Quite possible, yeah. But you know they got a beacon light. Did you know? You know about the beacon light.
Yeah. Yeah, there was always a beacon there. I remember it when I was a kid.
Do you remember any airliners landing there? Right. Emergency landings?
No. The only time I remember going there to see an airplane was when Oakley Kelly would come back to Grove City. He would land at that field.
At Tate Field?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oakley would...
I've heard of him.
Grove City boy, mm-hmm. been run out of town, thrown out of town. He was a bad boy.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah. We didn't let him in town.
Oh.
He caused so much trouble. And his mother lived there, and he would come to see her.
Is he related to the guy who received the Congressional Medal of Honor? You know, there's a guy in Grove City who got one.
I think.
Kelly.
I think it's Oakley, yeah.
I think
it was him, yeah.
The same? No, he was in the infantry. This guy was in the infantry.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Well, Mowgli got some medals of some kind. I don't know. He was pretty well. I know I had heard that he'd flown over Grove City in a bomber in the early part of the war and almost took the chimneys out of the houses. Of course,
he was a daredevil.
The cops couldn't catch him anyway, and that thing, so he'd do anything to upset them.
What did he do? What made him so...
Just a kid, wild, you know. Probably go out and get drunk and race around the streets and over the sidewalks.
Yeah.
And just nothing bad. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, cause problems for the police and get them upside down.
Yeah.
But the time that I remember most, he came back and my brother-in-law was at our farm one afternoon. And this plane flew over real low and buzzed around two or three times. And he said, that's Oakley Kelly. Let's go up and see his airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll get to see him. So we raced up the back roads to Mercer to the field. And he had already, somebody had picked him up and taken him to Grove City, but his plane was there. And it was a beautiful plane. It was... old P-26E.
Oh, yeah.
It was, of course,
fixed blue. Undercarriage.
Pardon?
With a fixed undercarriage.
Fixed undercarriage, a radial engine, a ring cowling on.
Yeah.
It was fabric-covered fuselage on, and, of course, painted blue and yellow. Just pretty
beautiful
as it could be. It's a beautiful airplane today.
Yeah.
You know, of course, they're almost extinct, probably, but I think the last one I saw was in the Air Force Museum at Wright-Patterson Field.
Yeah, I'd like to go there. I've never been there.
I want to go there again. Nice.
Oh, I'd love
you
to go.
You have to spend a whole day there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's...
They got all the planes there, haven't they?
Yeah, everything from the Wright brothers up to the...
All the Army planes. Anything that's been in the government service, right?
Yeah, and some of the special planes, like the Enola Gay.
Is that there?
All the gays there. The B-52 that dropped the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
They have replicas of the atom bomb too.
So you saw Oakley Kelly's plane.
Yeah.
Was that during the war? They still were flying B-26s?
No, this would be before the war, Jim. This would be 39 or 40. Tired about the only thing I recall flying during the war was the Stearman P-17 Stearman trainers that they used for advanced training.
Yeah,
they would train the cadets like they did my cousin and the Cubs for the basic training.